It's time to have lunch and talk sports. It's the Midday Sports Zone on Middle Georgia's ESPN.
Happy Monday. Welcome into the Midday Sports Zone. Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley. It's just us. No Chris Kirstner today. Plenty of open phone time. What on earth will we talk about? Did anything happen this weekend? Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Wow.
It was a great weekend for the city of, or for Georgia sports.
It really was.
Was it not?
It really was. It could not have gone better, if you ask me. It's an exciting day. The Braves play in the National League Championship Series for the first time in 19 years tonight. For those of you blessed souls that have to be at work at 8 a.m., it's going to be a long week, but you can do it. We're here for your support.
Have they set the times past today?
Nope. We talked about this last week. Major League Baseball, once again, not doing itself any favors. I can tell you with great joy that the Braves pregame show starts tonight on the Superstations at 6:50, taking you up to the first pitch at 8:08. Jim Powell or Ben Ingram will be alongside Joe Simpson for the play-by-play call. And the Braves will take on the Dodgers in game one of the NLCS. And
don't know when that's going to be.
After the game, Kevin McAlpin will have comments and reaction from the players. Tomorrow for game two, I will tell you that Ian Anderson has been named the starter for the Atlanta Braves. And first pitch will be, well, sometime tomorrow. We don't know when. But as soon as we find out, and hopefully they don't wait to the conclusion of tonight's game, which they probably will. But we'll have it for you. I know they won't play early enough to preempt this show. So 24 hours from now, hopefully, I can be able to tell you what time the Braves actually play a baseball game tomorrow.
Damn right. They know better than to preempt our show.
Yeah.
They did that crap last week.
Right. Because that's what they're worried about.
They know better. Yeah. We had a little talk.
Yeah. That's what it
had
was.
Had a little programming meeting. No, but do you think it was because of the finals and they wanted to make sure the Dodgers and the Lakers weren't playing opposite each other? But now the finals are over. Set the game times.
I don't think that should matter.
I don't think so either because they did it last night.
I think it may actually have something to do with the Bills-Patriots game being played on Tuesday night. But to me, that should not matter.
But you got two games anyway.
I mean, right. That's right? What I'm saying. That shouldn't matter. If people would rather watch football, they're going to watch football. If they'd rather watch baseball, they're going to watch baseball. I mean, for me personally, they could throw the first pitch at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. I will be awake, pounding coffee, and enjoying it.
Last night, our HQ headquarters Twitter feed tweeted out, "What are you going to be watching tonight?" And they had a baseball, football, basketball. And I said, yes.
Yeah.
Because I'm watching all, and that in this day and age, you can do
that. You can. You absolutely can do that. I use a streaming service for my air quote cable. There's not an actual cable anymore. So I can pull my TV up on a TV, a laptop, a desktop, a phone.
Saturday afternoon at noon, I was trying to be sneaky.
Uh-oh.
And I had my laptop. I had the TV on. I had three games on my laptop. I had the TV on, right?
Yeah.
So I got four games.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, Matt, go get your laptop. Let's set it up right here beside us and put more streams on.
Boom.
Well, watch ESPN, you can only run three streams at once on one account.
Oh.
So I could only watch four at a time.
Poor guy.
But there were like seven games I wanted to watch at noon.
It was incredible.
But still, you can watch more than one game at a time.
You can. So baseball just announced a start time. All right, let's start with the Atlanta Falcons. Oh, my gosh. I've never felt such a sense of relief in my life. There were immediately following yesterday's loss to the Panthers, there were rumors. Jeff Schultz had it early that Dan Quinn was done. And didn't know when the announcement was going to come, but it just sounded like that was all that was lacking was official word from the Atlanta Falcons. And as the night went on, the Atlanta Falcons tweeted out that indeed Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff were done. They're done. And deep breath. I am relieved. I don't have to worry anymore about anything as a Falcons fan. Yesterday, I was telling my wife, I said, you know, the thing is, when your football team has a bad year, that's not any fun. But when it's to the point where it's time to fire the coach, like, it kind of starts to ruin your weekend. And that sucks. And yesterday...
And you feel bad wanting somebody to get fired.
Yeah, well, there's nothing good about
it. No, it's nothing
good about it. I mean, because the thing is, if you feel like the head football coach of your favorite team should be fired, that means your football team's not good.
They stink. Yes.
And ultimately, that sucks, period. But now that it's over, it doesn't matter anymore, you know? And the important thing to me is that they fired Dimitroff, too. So now there has to be somebody in that front office now that is going to do right by the next regime. You know, somebody that can step in an interim, whether it's going to be them or not, and do right by 2021. AKA, if you can trade Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, do it.
Yep. No doubt.
There's nothing to salvage here. I think the sentiment for most fans, and it's nothing against Matt or Julio, it's just time to do something. It's time to turn the page. It didn't work. They didn't win a Super Bowl. I think the main reason, I mean, we can get into 2016. They should have won a Super Bowl. Okay, they didn't. And I think Dan Quinn and his stay aggressive approach had a lot to do with that. But I also think, ultimately, Thomas Dimitroff as a general manager, if you want to take a bigger picture look at this thing, he was a big part of the reason they didn't win a Super Bowl with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, too. That being said, I do think on the way out the door, there is a debt of gratitude for winning a conference championship in the NFC. And this 12-year run with Thomas Dimitroff as the GM has been the best. So it's not all bad, but it's just time to turn the page. For Thomas Dimitroff should have been fired with Mike Smith. Dan Quinn, I might be a little bit overreactionary compared to most, but after 2018, I wanted him gone. So these are two moves for me as a fan that are long overdue. And the other thing, too, I think, after watching that game with the Panthers yesterday, is there are two clear choices to be the next head coach of this football team, and they are Eric Bieniemy and Joe Brady. Flip a coin, however you want to do that, draw whatever. I'm 50-50 as it gets with those two. I would love to see one of those two men come in here and lead this franchise. If they can trade Matt Ryan, great. If they can't, hey, they've got a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback to work with. And if they can trade Matt Ryan and they play things their cards right the rest of the way of the season, I think Joe Brady with Trevor Lawrence at the helm of his offense would be something to watch in the National Football League.
I'm telling you, it's weird to say, because like you said, Thomas Dimitroff, when 50 years from now, or not 50, 20 years from now, they might retire his cardigan. Whatever, I mean.
his bicycle?
retire his Fu Manchu, whatever. I mean, he's been the best GM you've ever had. And it might not ever...
It's really not even close.
It might not ever come close to that.
The second closest to me would be Dan Reeves.
Right. So, that can be true. And it can also be true that it's time for him to go. I mean, 12 years as a GM with one team is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And if he had stayed, he would have seen two coaches get fired. And two peaks... And in two big-time valleys after the peaks,
mm-hmm.
because you couldn't sustain it.
Yeah.
That's typically on the GM. Jeff wrote in his column last night, Matt Ryan said, I'm not pulling my weight. And Jeff wrote, nobody is. That typically falls on the head coach. And that's true. But when you have big peaks followed by big valleys, that's usually on the GM.
Mm-hmm.
So they both needed to go, and they did. And it's the right move, even though Thomas has been great, even though Dan led you to the Super Bowl. It's time to move on. I think the same can be said of Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. I believe they're both Hall of Famers. I don't think there should be a debate about either one of them.
Oh, no.
But that can also it can also be true that, hey, it's time to move on. It's not working right now. And, Russ, if you get a new head coach... And you get a new GM, they're going to want to put their stamp on this franchise. And what better way would it do to do that? Would it be to tear it all down to the studs and draft a kid who's from the state of Georgia? And don't just draft him because of that. Draft him because he looks like Peyton Manning.
He really does. He really does. A more mobile Peyton Manning,
right,
mind you.
And I think with a bigger arm.
Yeah. So you know, you look at the history of Thomas Dimitroff now, the Atlanta Falcons in his tenure went to the playoffs 6 times. They played in 2 conference championship games and 1 Super Bowl. And compared to the rest of the history of this franchise, not bad. You look at Dan Quinn's track record since 2015 in that, I guess, 5.5-year stint, because it's over. Whew, thank goodness. Feels good to say that. Took him to a Super Bowl and 2 playoff appearances. And Dan Quinn, the first coach ever in Falcons history to win a playoff game in back-to-back seasons. I'm not going to sit here and tap dance on the grave and not give them their due, but it's time to move on. And then, you know, when you again, when you look at the in retrospect of Thomas Dimitroff's, that first draft that he had, he got Matt Ryan, Sam Baker, Curtis Lofton, Harry Douglas, Thomas Dekou, and Croy Bierman on at different levels, 6 contributors out of that draft. It was incredible, and it really set the tone. But we know what happened after the 2010 season. They gave up 4 draft picks to go draft a wide receiver and immediately said, no, this isn't a move that says we're going for it. And at that moment, that's when things started to turn sour for me with Thomas Dimitroff, because not only did you give up way too much to get one player, you then in turn said, coming off a 13-3 season, mind you, oh, that we weren't going all in. That wasn't a Super Bowl or bust move. It absolutely was a Super Bowl or bust move. You were just trying to save face. It didn't work. 3 years later, the team was 4-12. Mike Smith would get fired the next year in 2014 after a 6-10 season, and that's where Thomas Dimitroff should have been gone. He wasn't. He got to hang around. Dan Quinn had 2 good seasons. One, they went to the Super Bowl. One, they won a playoff game. But the other years, 8-8, 7-9, 7-9, 0-5. And now you look at the career of Matt Ryan, and his first 3 years in this league, Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons went 33-15. That wouldn't be the case from 2011 until now. And that I do put at the feet of Thomas Dimitroff. And Dan Quinn and Mike Smith have something to do with that as well. They but had, this is long overdue.
It is. And they had such good drafts at certain points. But then they had drafts with just... And not even just the draft. Drafting at a position. They missed so badly on defensive linemen in their drafts.
Yep.
Parade Jerry. Do I need to say anything more than Parade Jerry?
I mean, I don't think you can sum it up any better than that.
So, but that happens to everybody. Every GM, you can't hit on everybody, but.
But you can hit on somebody.
Right. They didn't hit on any. They kind of hit on Vic Beasley for 1 year out of 5. They have not hit on Tack McKinley. We know that. I mean, Pierre Jerry. I mean, that's all we got to say is Pierre Jerry. But it's just time. It doesn't have to be mock Dan Quinn or mock Thomas Dimitroff or mock this or mock that. It can be that it's just time. Now, I will say it's time for Rich McKay to go too. I think you got too many.
Yeah.
And if you're a real GM and you really want to be a GM and you got him hovering,
yeah,
you're not going to take this job.
I think that could be an issue. Do you think that there's enough professionalism and a good enough relationship to where Arthur Blank could say, hey, Rich, you know, we need to trade some of these pieces and try to free up some cap space for next season and get some draft picks for the new regime. Can you kind of be, you know, head that up for the rest of 2020 and then we'll give you a nice severance? I mean, is that, do you think?
I think so.
The relationship's good enough that
I would hope so.
It could be like, hey, man, look, I'm going to ask you to do this thing that's really difficult. I need you to take a dead end job here, but we'll pay you for it.
Well, you demoted him.
Right.
You demoted him when you hired Thomas Dimitroff,
right,
who then became the best GM you've ever had.
Right.
And it ain't close with him.
Oh, man.
He needs to go.
Yeah.
Look, he got the stadium built. Give him a suite in the stadium.
Give
him a
severance. Yeah.
And say, look.
Give him an honorary title at your foundation.
Senior advisor. He's always going to have Blank's ear.
That's fine.
He's always going to have Blank's ear. But him hovering,
he doesn't need to be a part of the
in
day-to-day.
The franchise is going to cause problems.
Yep.
You also don't need to have a coach, a head coach, with like 9 other former head coaches on the staff.
Yeah, no, it's the next man hired needs to be he needs to be running the show. All right, we're going to take a break. Before I do, let me just say one more thing that just kind of drives home why it's long overdue and it's time, because now we can start talking about the future of the Atlanta Falcons. We can have a new regime come in. We can start talking about a plan, i.e. what the Braves did in 2015 and what the Hawks are currently doing right now. you can have a plan moving forward, and it won't feel like a regular ship. And only once on the program do I have to say to drive the point home, because I feel like these people should be fired. They've already been fired. I don't have to say things like the franchise is 0-5 for the first time since Bobby Petrino was the head coach. Or I don't have to say the franchise is 0-5 for the first time since Mike Vick went to prison. I only have to say that once. Doesn't matter now. They're gone, and we can move on. We're going to take a break, come back. We'll talk about the Georgia-Tennessee game. Take a little, start to peek ahead a little bit. There's kind of a big game in Tuscaloosa this weekend. We'll be chatting up this week for sure. We'll take a peek ahead of that. Georgia Tech had a nice win on Friday night. And, of course, we'll preview Braves and Dodgers. That and more as we continue on the Midday Sports Zone right after this.
Now, back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, the Superstations.
11:20, Russ and Daniel back with you, Midday Sports Zone. Before we get into college football, there's sad news in the world today. Joe Morgan, Hall of Fame second baseman for the Cincinnati Reds, did a little Sunday night baseball with Joe with John Miller as well.
It was great.
They were a good tandem, man. That was some childhood stuff there. But he's died today, and it's just, man, in baseball this year, my goodness gracious, it's a lot. I mean, Whitey Ford was that Friday?
Yep.
Late last week, and
Tom Seaver
earlier this year. It seems to just be a constant wave of great legends of the game. Before we get into Georgia and Tennessee from the weekend, I want to remind you this hour of the Midday Sports Zone is brought to you by Classic Firearms, 3780 Northside Drive in Macon. You can visit them online, classicfirearmsga.com. All right, Georgia beats Tennessee 44-21. We'll get down into the weeds of it, but Daniel and I were talking about this, and I think we should watch the game the same way. I watched that Georgia and Tennessee game thinking to myself, there's no way Georgia's going to beat Alabama. And then I watched Alabama and Ole Miss and thought, yeah, Georgia can definitely beat Alabama. That was a crazy, crazy Saturday. It wasn't a great start for Georgia. Wasn't bad. I mean, their defense is absolutely incredible. They did give up some big plays in the pass game for touchdowns. Questionable decision to go for it by Kirby Smart that kind of led to one of those. But then really, as they got into the late third quarter, early fourth, the Bulldogs put it away. Outscored Tennessee 27-0 in the second half. The three things that kind of jumped out to me. Number one, they're going to have to play four quarters to beat Alabama. They played a good half against Arkansas, a good half against Tennessee. I think they could have played a good four quarters against Auburn. They just chose not to. But they're going to have to play four quarters and play four quarters well against the Crimson Tide. While Alabama has its issues on defense, we'll get into that. Their offense is incredible, and they will score on Georgia. How much? They're not scoring 50. That I can tell you. Can Georgia hold them under 30? Maybe. But Alabama's going to move the ball, and they're going to score points. The other thing that stood out to me, especially in the third quarter, the play calling got so predictable in that third quarter. Alabama defensively has some issues. You're going to have to open it up. You can play conservative and beat Tennessee and Auburn, but you're going to have to be more aggressive on offense against Alabama. Now, that being said, late into the third quarter, early fourth quarter, they did that. They didn't. Daniel, there were about two series there where I thought Brian Schottenheimer was calling plays again. And then all of a sudden, play action on first down, square in, boom, offense is rolling again. And then the third takeaway is Kendall Milton and Kenny McIntosh are the running backs on this team, not Zamir White.
Yeah, Zamir White, I don't know if it's the knee or what it is. He doesn't seem to trust what he has, and I don't think he has the explosiveness that those other guys do. And you said it during the break. He's more of a straight line guy, and they can shift and be shifty and get through the holes. And look, this offensive line isn't as dominant as it was last year, where they could just line up and
still
push
really
people
good,
around.
Though.
Still pretty good. But they're not what they have been. So maybe they do need that shiftiness back there a little bit more. Milton and McIntosh look really good to me.
They combined for 16 carries and 101 yards. Zamir White had 22 carries for 50 yards. And it's that wiggle. I just think they make the offense more explosive. And if you can get Milton and McIntosh rotating in, Stetson Bennett keeping it on some of the read options, I think Stetson has shown you that he can make some plays with his feet as well.
Yep.
I just think it makes that offense more dangerous.
Why do you give him that many more carries than them?
Well, again, I just think I said it after the Auburn game. I just thought they were too conservative in the second half. And, I mean, they're doing what they have to do to win these games. But to me, this is about winning a national championship. It's not about beating Tennessee and Auburn. Georgia should be able to do that easily. I know historically speaking that those are big rivalry games, but this program's at a different level. You know, I mean, Clemson, NC State's a legendary rival, right? The Textile Bowl,
baby. Yeah, I was at the very first Textile Bowl.
Clemson doesn't go into the game against NC State thinking, oh, God, it's a rivalry game. We got to be worried about this.
Thank God, not anymore.
It's
We used to.
And I'm not.
Before Dabo became the coach. That was the Tommy Bowden era.
And that's kind of.
Hell, we thought Wake was a rival when Tommy Bowden was the head coach.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm talking about. I mean, when Mark Richt took over in the hobnail boot and yada, yada, yeah, that was awesome because Tennessee had dominated the series. Folks, that was like 20 years ago.
Yep.
It's a new era of Georgia football, and they have elite talent. I don't know that I've seen a defense this good before. Clemson against Miami was pretty darn close, but I mean, there are two teams in this country right now playing defense, and it's Georgia and Clemson. Everybody else is kind of tapped out.
We haven't seen Ohio State yet. Ohio State will play defense.
We got to see the Buckeyes. But I think it's there. I think the SEC is there. No, Georgia doesn't have to win on Saturday. You got to win the second one against Alabama. But, I mean, it's there. I mean, with everything that's happened in this offseason, Jamie Newman opting out, Stetson Bennett coming out of nowhere and getting this job over JT Daniels and Dwan Mathis, it's just like, yeah, it's a dip back, but it's not a huge dip back. And here we are 3 weeks into the season. And if you don't think Georgia can win the SEC and go to the college football playoff, you're nuts. I think they can absolutely do that. It's just, you want to see them be a little bit more aggressive on the offensive side of the football. And again, you got to play for four quarters against Alabama.
Yeah, look, I was wrong. I mean, I was wrong about Georgia. I'll admit it. I didn't think they had a chance to win a national title and to be in the playoff hunt this year, and here they are, and they look every bit as good as Clemson and Alabama, and again, we haven't seen Ohio State, but I really think Georgia can win this game Saturday, and I didn't think I would have ever thought that going into this season. Going into last week, I didn't think Georgia had a chance to win this game. But you watch Alabama play defense. I saw a stat last night. Alabama has the worst three-and-out percentage in the country.
Wow.
Alabama! With that defense, or that defensive tradition, they have the fewest three-and-outs in the country.
Man, I'm telling you, dude, it took 3 weeks for us to see that the SEC is not immune to 2020. Whatever that means to you, whatever that is. Couple of stats here before we go to break. So the Mississippi State Bulldogs, remember now, they knocked off LSU to start the season, and we were like, oh my God, the Pirate has arrived.
900 yards passing that day, right? Or whatever it was, 600, whatever it was.
They lost 24-2. Mike Leach's offense didn't score a touchdown on the same day Alabama gave up more than 40 points to an unranked opponent for the first time in the poll era. That started in 1936. Mike Leach didn't score, and Alabama could not stop Ole Miss.
And Mike Leach, they threw six picks.
Alabama gave up 48 points on the day Mike Leach couldn't score.
I promise you. And Lane told us last week on the Dan Patrick Show, take the money line. I guess he knew what he was talking about.
I guess so.
He didn't say take the under, by the way, so he might have known something else. I would have lost a lot of money this weekend if I had gambled on college football.
Well, we picked against the spread, mind you. We'll go through that a little bit later on. See just how bad – and just reinforce to ourselves why we don't gamble, because I think I haven't gone through it all the way. But, yeah, I think there would have been some losses.
I saw those games, I was scared to death of the Clemson game. I was like, oh, my God, we're going to lose.
No, Clemson – right now, I mean, and look, it's a week-to-week deal, but as of this far into the season, I just think Clemson right now has proven to be head and shoulders above everybody else. I mean, if you take Alabama's offense and Georgia's defense, that's the Clemson Tigers right now. Alabama doesn't have the defense. Georgia, I think, has the offense. It's just, again, new coordinator, new faces in new places, new quarterback emerging. They may be there by the end of the year. But right now, it's Clemson and everybody else.
And our defense isn't good as Georgia's. I won't say that. It's really damn good, but I don't think it's shown that it's as good as Georgia's just yet.
No, it doesn't have to be.
But it doesn't have to be when we've got that quarterback and that running back.
It's not fair. It's just – I watched about a quarter of Clemson and Miami and was like, okay, yeah, this – And that I just, and then I saw the Alabama Ole Miss score. I was like, I gotta watch.
Well, I'm gotta watch the Clemson game because my blood does run orange.
Right.
But I'm like, can I flip over and watch? My God.
I don't know how to describe it. It's just like watching Ole Miss's offense, and they didn't win the game. I mean, Alabama still won the game.
Right.
But I mean, it was like I don't even know what to compare. I made a joke. It was like watching Jordan play for the Wizards. I didn't even know what to compare it to. It was just weird.
Every time I flipped over, Ole Miss would score, and then I'd turn it back, and Alabama had already scored again. I was like,
"Oh, it was.
Oh my God!"
Well, and then Alabama gained 97% of the total yards possible. I mean,
that's the craziest stat I've ever seen.
So, in other words, when Alabama took possession of the football, however many yards they were away from the goal line. If you total that up throughout the game, they covered 97% of those yards.
I think it was like the most yards they could have gotten in the game was 700 and something. And they ended up with 680 or whatever it was. Have you ever seen anything like that?
No.
That's crazy.
No.
But the thing about it is, and look, we got excited when Kiffin and Leach got the jobs, admittedly, because they are interesting. But if you're an Ole Miss and a Mississippi State fan, how long can you put up with this? To where, I mean, it's just a gimmick. And, I mean, come on, Mississippi State. 2 points.
Yeah, that's – and Costello got benched. And I don't know. It was a weird week in the SEC. You had 7 teams score over 40 points, and 2 teams, South Carolina and Kentucky, hold a team to less than 10.
It's the Big 12.
In
2020 is the SEC.
It really is. We'll take a break, come back. Georgia Tech got a win on Friday. We'll touch on that. And get into some of the other stuff that happened around college football. Talk a little Braves at the top of the hour. That and more as we continue right after this.
Back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
Welcome back into the Midday Sports Zone. Russ and Daniel with you here. So the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets took care of business under the Friday night lights. 46-27 over the Louisville Cardinals. It's a big win for the Jackets. I don't think any of us predicted that they would win this game, and they really put it away in the fourth quarter. They outscored Louisville 20-0 in the fourth quarter. And I tell you, man, Friday night football is not it's not the place for college football. I was telling Daniel, I mean, this is supposed to be a showcase for these two programs. Daniel, who was watching the game, said that the sideline reporter for the next night's Clemson-Miami game called in, and all they did was preview that for about 20 minutes. And
yeah, at least almost like three-fourths of a quarter.
Yeah.
And it's not her fault.
No.
She's doing what her bosses tell her to do.
Right. And same for the guys in the booth. But
sure.
But why? I mean, this is supposed to be, like, if you're going to put these games on Friday night to showcase these teams, at least showcase the teams. I was listening to the Rays and the Yankees, and it was about 9:30, and I thought, oh, I wonder what the Georgia Tech score is. Because I'm not thinking about a college football game on a Friday
night. It's not the place for it. No,
it's really not. And here's the question I have. And I think I want to phrase this the right way, because I think this Georgia Tech team may be good enough to where we can start nitpicking it a little bit. You know, you're not – last year, it's a rebuild. There's not a whole lot there. But I think they've shown us some things here. They found a quarterback with Jeff Sims. He threw for 249 yards, 2 touchdowns, didn't turn the ball over with interceptions. So that's good. And with Jahmyr Gibbs, they've definitely found a playmaker at running back. But why does Jeff Sims continue to lead this team in rushing? Jahmyr Gibbs had 13 carries, Dante Smith 8, Jameis Griffin 5, and Jerry Howard 1. Wouldn't you? I mean, isn't Gibbs somebody you want to get the ball to?
I want, and they're throwing the ball to him too, so yeah. that helps a little bit.
Yeah, he had 2 catches for 60 yards and a touchdown. And again, that's just kind of nitpicky, but. I mean, he's a really talented player, and I just wonder if they'll make – and look, he's a true freshman too, so it may be – that may be part of it. But
he's that Gibbs kid is something else.
He is. He's somebody that Jeff Collins and his staff identified early on, and this was the guy they want, and by the end of the recruiting cycle, Ohio State and LSU wanted him bad, and he stuck with Georgia Tech. You look at the remainder of this schedule moving forward after this win and what it does. I think they're not going to beat Clemson. Breaking news. All right. After that, they're at Boston College. That's a winnable game. I don't think they can beat Notre Dame. They can beat Pitt. Going to be tough. Pitt's got a really good defense. I don't think they'll beat Miami. They could beat Duke. They could beat NC State. If they win that, that's a 6-4 season, which is
remarkable.
Light years ahead of where this program was supposed to be. Right. So,
but you also, they can't go and play like they did against Syracuse because they could lose all those games.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
But I will say, you know, look, they were awful against Syracuse. Just awful. But then they got 2 weeks to work on all those mistakes, and they did. To me, that says a lot about what the, you know, we talk about the branding and the flash and all that stuff, to put it nicely. But I think they showed something about a football team that those 2 weeks, they fixed their problems for one night. Now, will they reemerge Saturday against Clemson? Maybe. But I think that says a lot about this coaching staff and this team, that they actually went and did the job that a football right. team's supposed to do and not worry about all that stuff.
Right, right, exactly. And they got the job done. And we were kind of joking last week. I've added to the hash marks, not hashtags.
You have?
Yeah. More hash marks, less hashtags and hash browns.
There you
See
go.
What I did there?
There you go.
But you know what? When you go out and you beat Louisville 46-27, you can have hash browns and hashtags.
Have the hash browns and hashtags and all of it.
You can do it all. And as we said, it's got to be about the product on the field first. And the product on the field is it's there's potential and it's getting better.
They've still got a lot of issues on defense. I mean, Clemson could score 60 on them easily.
Oh yeah,
Saturday.
No, there's no doubt.
But that kid at quarterback. That kid at tailback, and another true freshman starting at tackle.
Yeah, we forget about that.
Jordan Williams.
Yep.
In this class, recruiting class, the previous class, Jameis Griffin, there's talent in that class too. They keep recruiting like that. They've got a chance.
There's no question about it. There's no question about it. I don't know that you ever catch Clemson or Georgia, who will be back on the schedule annually. But you know what? If you can catch everybody else and do it consistently – you know, it just, it only takes, at that point, Daniel, it only takes one upset.
Well, and you can catch them enough to beat them every once in a while. That's,
right, exactly. Yeah. Now, well, that being said, they're going to have to come back to the pack a little bit, too. Let's be honest.
Sure.
When Georgia Tech's jumped up and beaten Clemson or jumped up and beaten Georgia, Georgia and Clemson were not rolling like they are right now.
Right. You wouldn't think so.
So those
Unless
two
are, something crazy happened.
Those two would have to come back to the pack just a tick. But, I mean, gosh, that's years down the road. But... You know, look, I will make fun of the graphics and the marketing and all the goofy stuff Georgia Tech does because I think it's goofy. But as we've said all along, they're not putting that out there for me. But when the wins follow, that stuff's fine.
When you're winning, that stuff is great.
Nope. It's not a problem. So hats off. Give them credit. They found a way to get it done against Louisville, and then all of a sudden, the Louisville team that we thought was pretty good, sitting there at 1-3, 0-3 in the conference, and
can't stop anybody.
Nope, they can't.
I mean, Georgia Tech, you got to look. They're down 21-7 in this game the other night, and they went right down the field and scored at the end of the half, made it 21-14. That changed the entire complexion of the game.
Yeah, Yellow Jackets outscored them 32-6 in the second half.
They did.
I mean, that's pretty impressive. We'll take a break, come back. We'll go to the report card. We'll see how Daniel and I did with our ACC and Ooh. SEC picks.
Please don't.
That
is it as bad as I think it is?
Well, we'll go through okay. and find out. Just relax.
I thought you had looked at it already.
Back with more right after this.
Now, back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, the Superstations.
/11:46, Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley back with you, Midday Sports Zone. All right, we picked games against the spread this week just to change it up a little bit. And it just reinforces why we don't bet.
We won't be doing that again.
No. Daniel went 2-5 in the ACC. You got the NC State game correct, and you got the Boston College game correct.
God.
You missed Louisville, Georgia Tech. You missed Virginia Tech, North Carolina. You missed Syracuse and Duke. You missed Notre Dame, Florida State, and you missed Clemson, Miami. Don't feel bad. I went 1-6 in the ACC. I got the Clemson game right. So at least I had more faith in your team than you did.
You did. That was the only one you got right.
That's it. That's the one.
Oh, my God.
And then we did a little bit better with our SEC picks. Let me pull this up here. Daniel, you went 3-4. You got the Georgia game, the Texas A&M Florida game, and the Arkansas game correct. You missed LSU, which I'm sure the rest of the world did too. Vanderbilt, Alabama, Mississippi State. This is why I don't bet. Was 2-5. Got the Georgia game right. Got the Arkansas Auburn game right. Missed Florida, LSU, Vandy, Alabama, and Mississippi State. So here we go into week four of the SEC. It's Alabama and Georgia play each other on a week where, I mean, this is really going to tell us who the best team in the conference is, and it's really not going to be close. I think for all the preseason hype, look, Tennessee, we said last week, Jeremy Pruitt, I think, deserves a lot of credit. He's brought this team a long way in a short period of time, and they are much better on both sides of the ball in terms of line of scrimmage. There's no credit or no doubt about that. He deserves a lot of credit. But – when you're talking about quote unquote catching Georgia, that's a whole different conversation because Georgia's at an elite level, especially defensively. And that, going back to the preseason, this is why I said, and look, we don't know how this is going to end up. But the reason I still pick Georgia to win the East is because like I said about Florida, I need to see you get a big time win. And I know this irritates people sometimes, but I haven't seen things to change my mind. And this season's different because there's teams not playing. So I'm not talking about 2020. But most years, you will see teams in the SEC not really beat anybody of significance and start out 3-0 or 4-0, and all of a sudden they're ranked 12th in the country.
Right.
And Florida has been one of those teams, and all of a sudden I'm supposed to buy Florida as some sort of a threat to Georgia. I mean, I got to see them win on the field. I got to see them win a big game first. They haven't done that. And you go out and you lose to Texas A&M, a team that struggled to beat Vanderbilt, and you can't stop anybody.
And then the coach is making excuses. I mean, he's we want to have a full house. Texas A&M had so many people there. I mean, Dan Mullen makes a lot of excuses.
You can't, stop somebody.
That's right. That Texas A&M crowd didn't have anything to do with the fact that you couldn't stop Kellen Mond or their running game.
No. Last year, Florida beat Miami, UT Martin, Kentucky, Tennessee, Towson, Auburn, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Florida State, and Virginia. They lost to LSU 42-28. They lost to Georgia 24-17. I mean, you got to do better in the LSU-Georgia games for me. Now, the Georgia game ended up being one score, but I didn't even see the second half of that game because Georgia was so far ahead. Most of us that weren't Georgia or Florida fans turned it off and had something else going. And when they go and they give up 24 the previous week to South Carolina, I watched the first quarter and a half of the Florida-South Carolina game. Florida's not – they're not – I mean, you can put whatever number you want to the left of them, but they're not ready to compete with the Georgias and Alabamas of the world, and that was on full display again at Kyle Field. Arkansas got absolutely hosed. A terrible call by the officials in that game. And then the SEC doubled down on their terrible officiating and defended the indefensible. I don't understand. Sometimes I wonder, are these organizations, like the SEC officials, whatever official Twitter account, put out, their statement on what happened at the end of the game. Are these institutions like that so far up into their ivory towers, they don't understand that just because you say something doesn't mean the public is going to buy it. And anybody that watched that game knows, A, Bo Nix threw the ball backwards, and B, Arkansas made a clear recovery. Just because you said they didn't doesn't mean he – I mean, come on.
Right. Now, look, it was a hard play to call on the field because it was weird.
No doubt.
He fumbled the snap. He obviously doesn't know the rule that if you fumble the snap, you can't spike it. That's a penalty. They got that right on the field. But it's hard to see that he turned around and threw the ball behind him. It's a fumble. It's a clear fumble. We've been watching football our entire lives. You throw the ball behind you, it hits the ground, that's a fumble. I don't care what your arm motion looked like. I don't care what your intent was. It doesn't have anything to do with intent. He fumbled the ball.
Right.
And then they said there was no clear recovery.
It's not true.
Kiss my behind. I went and went on ESPN, watch ESPN, and watched till that play and saw a clear recovery.
Just say you
Arkansas
made a mistake.
Arkansas got hosed. And I can understand it. Look, if this was an SEC crew and it was one SEC team versus a non-SEC team, hey, we want to protect our own. Arkansas's in your conference too, by the way, SEC. You screwed one of your own teams. I don't care that Auburn is the bigger profile program. You screwed Arkansas. Now, if I'm Arkansas, how do I trust anything the SEC tells me?
You can't, because they won't own the mistake. Everybody makes mistakes. Just own it.
No doubt.
And do better. But that's not what they did. So now, you know, it creates a credibility issue. And now, because of what happened in the Auburn-Arkansas game, moving forward, statements released by the conference when the officials make mistakes aren't plausible. Nobody's going to buy it because now they have a credibility issue. When everybody now has the ability with technology to go back and see what actually happened, you're going to have to accept the truth.
Yep.
You're going to have to. You don't just get to sit up there and dictate to people what happened when that's not what happened.
When I saw what they said, I went back on my couch in Macon, Georgia, and found the spot of the game online and screenshotted it. And there's an Arkansas player laying on the ball. Now, there's an Auburn player there too, and his hands are kind of on the ground or whatever, but it's clear the Arkansas kid had the ball.
Yeah, it really was. It's unfortunate.
And as far as Georgia, I was wrong. I thought Florida was ready. Florida's not ready.
No.
Florida's not ready for that. As Ernie Johnson said in that NCAA tournament commercial, they don't want any of that smoke. They don't want any part of Georgia. Georgia is going to blow Florida off the field.
Right. The game between Georgia and Alabama on Saturday, basically right now, the way it looks, shakes out to where the winner gets the ability to go through the rest of their schedule with room for one mistake, one little oopsie. The loser doesn't have that wiggle room. But right. This isn't the SEC championship game. This is the preliminary to the rematch. And I fully expect to see these two teams play again in Atlanta. To me, real quick, the biggest winner in the SEC this weekend, South Carolina. You lose that game to Vanderbilt, I don't know. Will Muschamp and Dan Quinn might be hanging out together today.
That's your one for the year for them.
That was a huge win for the Gamecocks.
One looks better than zero.
And you did it in style, 41-7. So, congratulations, Will Muschamp. You still got the gig. We'll take a break for the top of the hour. Braves-Dodgers tonight. We'll get into it. That and more as we roll along on the Midday Sports Zone.
It's time to have lunch and talk sports. It's the Midday Sports Zone on Middle Georgia's ESPN.
Hour number two of the Midday Sports Zone. Russ Brown, Daniel Shirley with you here. Hello, Braves baseball coming up tonight, if anybody's interested. It's so cool to have the Braves back in the league championship series. First time in 19 years. You can really get a sense of the excitement throughout the state of Georgia. And, wow, just buckle up. Potential for 7 games in 7 days. It's going to be a wild ride. It is going to absolutely, positively be a wild ride. These two teams, very good offensively. Pitching staffs. I mean, on paper, the Dodgers are better, but I mean, after the last series with what Anderson and Wright did, bring them on. I don't know what's going to happen here. I really don't. This is I think what you're going to see in this series for the Braves, win or lose, is how far they've come since 2018. And they played the divisional round against LA. The Braves kind of came out of nowhere and won the NL East that year. And there was this sense of, wow, what a ride. We're in the playoffs again. And after the long road back from the teardown of 2015, there was just this sense you were happy to be there. Juan Acuña Jr. gave us a magical moment with the grand slam. And, you know, the Dodgers took care of business and on you went. That's not what this is. I think there's some expectation here. I think the Braves can win this series.
They even said it. Yeah, 2 years ago, we were just happy to be there. That's not their mindset now. They think they can win the series. I think they can, too, and I think it's going to be a great series. Look, Dodgers have a better rotation, you would think, right? Braves have a better bullpen, you would think. The lineups are pretty damn comparable.
They
are? This is a very even series going into this series.
Right.
And it's just whoever plays better wins it.
Yeah. If you look at the regular season numbers, I mean, there's just both lineups are filled with guys that can hit. I think the Braves hit for average better than the Dodgers.
Yep.
But then you look at the power numbers for the postseason, and the Dodgers didn't really hit a lot of home runs in the postseason.
Right. And the Braves didn't hit at all the first couple of games of the postseason, but at least they did hit some home runs to win the games.
Yeah, and they got it going in that when they needed to, when Max Fried didn't perform well. And tonight, too, I think with Max Fried, beyond the stats and the matchups and everything that's happened this year, there's going to be a little. You know, I wasn't so hot the last time out, so I'm, you know, he's probably itching to get the ball to go out there and show folks. You know, look, Anderson and Wright were good. I'm better. You know, I think maybe a little internal competition, kind of like we used to see. Oh, I don't know, 35 years ago or so. You know, between the three starters, like a little one-upsmanship, that wouldn't be bad to see tonight.
No, I think he's going to pitch well. And, I mean, now look, you can – this isn't the Marlins and the Reds. You can pitch well and not get a shutout. The Dodgers are going to score runs. Mm-hmm. Their lineup is way better than the Marlins, or the, especially the Reds. The Reds' lineup was terrible. Mm-hmm. But you're going to give up some runs and still pitch – and you can still pitch pretty well while doing that. I just think there's something special about this group right now, man. There's something special about it. I mean, you see where we've kind of lamented about the rotation the entire 60-game season. And then we got in the playoffs. What's been the key? The rotation. It's been dominant. Now, the bullpen has, too. But that, to me, shows you a team. You said going into postseason, I don't think they can win a 1-0 game. I don't think they can win low-scoring games, and they have.
They have. The majority of the games they've won have been that a low-scoring type deal, and they have won those games. They've absolutely won those games. And I think the key to this series is going to be not just starting pitching, but pitching. And what's happened here, and I, look, with the playoffs, you're dealing with a small sample size, but you are with this year's 2020 season as well. The clear advantage on paper throughout the and the other thing too we have to mention, because of the only playing NL East versus AL East and within your own division, you know, you're comparing stats against different teams.
Right. You haven't seen
so the stats,
and the NL East wasn't as good this year as we thought it was going
to
be.
Right. So it's kind of it's kind of hard to tell. I mean, you have the numbers and you look at them, but you also have to remember, like, the Dodgers put their numbers up against teams the Braves didn't play and vice versa. But the clear advantage in this series on paper, as far as the regular season goes, is to the Dodgers. And the offenses, as we said, are comparable, but the pitching staff for L.A., they were first in overall ERA, starter ERA, and bullpen ERA. I mean, you can't be better than that.
Right.
They were perfect. It, so, they as good as the Braves' bullpen is, the Dodgers' bullpen was better. And we know the issues the Braves have with the starting rotation. But where the script gets flipped is the postseason numbers, and the Braves are first, second, and first. The Dodgers are second, third, and third in those same categories. So the Braves pitching staff has actually been better in the postseason. Now, that being said, that's Reds, Marlins. The Dodgers just got done playing the Padres. So a little bit better lineup.
Right.
But the Braves, and I think more
than... And the Dodgers played the Brewers, right, in the first round.
Yep.
And they weren't great offensively. So, yeah, it's hard to tell. I mean, the numbers are the numbers, but we're not talking about we're talking about apples and oranges comparing these things.
And it's look, in baseball, you know, we always joke about football. Football's never going to change. It's blocking and tackling. That's what football is. Baseball starting pitching. If Anderson Wright and Fried pitch well, the Braves are going to win the series. If they don't, they won't. I mean, I we can really just knock it down to that, and it's going to come down to these pitching staffs. And both teams, I think, you know, with the bullpens that they have, you know, if a starter gets in trouble early, these managers, especially with no DH, can turn to a really talented group of pitchers to come in and finish games. And that's going to be a part of the series too, I think, is if there are hiccups with a starter, how do you manage the bullpen from there, especially considering the fact that, again, you could be looking at seven games in 7 days. That's going to be a challenge in this, and we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out. The pitching matchups tonight, it's Fried and Walker Buehler tomorrow. And again, we don't know what time the game is tomorrow, which is completely and utterly stupid on Major League Baseball's part. You can't promote your postseason because we don't know when the damn game is. Ian Anderson and Clayton Kershaw. Kyle Wright goes in game 3 for the Braves, to be determined for the Los Angeles Dodgers. So it's going to be fun, and I think this is really it's an opportunity for the Atlanta Braves to go to the World Series, and they got a real chance here. And I think really in the back of my mind, and I'm trying to just get – I will be disappointed if they don't win the series because I think they can win. But I'm also reminding myself before this thing even starts, no matter what happens over the course of this series, the Braves get swept. Doesn't matter. They're coming back. This isn't a flash in the pan. This isn't a come-out-of-nowhere miracle season. This has been 5 years in the making. There's been a build-up to this, and it's not going away anytime soon.
No, it's not. I mean, look at all the young talent. Freddie's not old by any means. Albies, Swanson. Acuna, Austin Riley, Soroka, Wright, Fried, Anderson. I mean, there's 8 guys right there that any team in baseball would start on those teams. Any team, they would start. And you've got all of them in your roster, in your clubhouse.
Yeah,
it's remarkable. And you've got a really damn good manager.
Yep.
That people don't appreciate.
But
oh my God.
I think Braves fans do.
Well, huh?
I think Braves fans do.
Well, I don't think all of them do. They still want to moan and complain about whatever bullpen movie makes. And I'm sure that'll happen again in this series.
Yeah, that's whether you win or lose. I mean, that's all that is.
I mean, it happened in game 1 when he pulled out Fried and the bullpen dominated.
Yeah.
But yeah, he should have left Fried in longer. They won the game 1-0. Are you kidding me? Are you just that miserable that you
just
have to
ignore,
have something to complain about?
You got to learn to ignore that stuff.
I do.
Man.
I do.
That's all there is to it.
But, I mean, he's really good. And I'm telling you, Rick Kranitz is a great pitching coach.
Yeah.
I wish he was still with the Phillies. I don't know why they let him go. He is really good. No doubt. No doubt.
Thank you.
And the GM has made some really damn good moves.
Yeah. No, there's don't quite.
Ozuna.
This is what.
Darnold.
This is what a highly functioning organization looks like. You have to have good players. You have to have a good manager. You have to have a good coaching staff. And you have to have a good front office. Check, 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 check. The Braves have it. Ownership could be better, but, you know, it's working. It's working. So, again, 6:50 is the pregame show start. First pitch, 8:08. We'll have all of it for you here on the Superstations. Postgame included with Kevin McAlpin. Taking you into the wee hours, hopefully celebrating a game 1 win by the Atlanta Braves tonight. All right, we're going to open up the phones now, 478-646-ESPN. Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff are out. Georgia-Alabama on the horizon. Braves-Dodgers in the postseason. Now, also, there's news. This is so stupid. Roddy Nabolsi tweeting that there was an incident Saturday night with a Georgia wide receiver, but they've put it behind a paywall. So, I mean, as soon as that news comes out, we'll pass it along.
Does it say which receiver?
No. Well, it's behind a paywall. Behind,
so you can't even see. I didn't know if they teased it with the photo or something.
Yeah, no, they teased the whole thing. So it's behind a paywall, but the information will come out eventually.
Well, there was one acting really immature on the sideline Saturday during the game.
Yes.
I would, they're, you know. And a couple other times during the game, too.
So. I'll give you 2 words as well. You don't really need to worry about that. Here we go. Tommy Bush in an incident. He was hit by a car.
Oh, apparently. My goodness.
This is coming from Anthony Dasher with UGA Sports.
Wow.
Minor accident. He was hit by a car while crossing the street. He was walking with a group of teammates, was bumped by the car, suffered bruises and facial lacerations. He did not dress out in the game. He hasn't appeared in the game this year. He's got 1 catch for 1 yard.
Oh, hope he's okay.
In his career. But it sounds like he's, some bumps and bruises and whatnot. Thank goodness. Thank goodness for that. That's so scary stuff.
Bad that they did.
No. It wasn't anything bad. But back to George Pickens. Two reasons you don't have to worry about his childish behavior. Kyaris Jackson.
No doubt, man. No doubt.
Middle Georgia saving the day again.
I mean, I tweeted out the other day, they can't cover it. Nobody can cover him.
Nope. Good luck.
And he is as good a young man as there is out there, and he works as hard as anybody you're ever going to come across. And that's, you know, people say it all the time.
It's kind of odd how that's what rises to the top.
When you work hard and you're a good person, good things happen to you.
It's not a coincidence. 478-646-ESPN. Back with more right after this.
Georgia Sports on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com. Back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
Welcome back into the Midday Sports Zone. Russ and Daniel with you here. 478-646-ESPN if you want to jump in. Braves Dodgers tonight. Dan Quinn, Thomas Dimitroff gone. Alabama, Georgia Saturday. I think Bama opened up as a 5-point favorite. I wanted to see what the over-under in that game was going to be. I don't know if that's out yet or not. Because, God, I still can't get over that game Saturday night, Alabama and Ole Miss. I mean, I was literally like watching a train wreck.
I mean, it looked like watching Baylor and Oklahoma State 5 years ago.
Yeah.
When everybody mocked them because they don't play any defense. And, oh, my God, why?
It's Alabama.
Exactly.
It's Alabama.
It takes it to another level when it's Alabama.
Stop Ole Miss. I mean, they won the game because Ole Miss couldn't stop Alabama
Literally. Except for like 40 yards. Wasn't that you said?
You had Snoop Connor and Jaron Ely in that game both go over 120 yards. 40 carries for 248 yards and 4 touchdowns against an Alabama defense.
Stunning.
Kenny Yeboah had 7 catches for 181 yards, 2 touchdowns. Elijah Moore, 11 receptions for 143 yards.
And it was... they got beat in every way that you could think a defense can get beat. Now, Mississippi did too. Ole Miss did too.
Oh, yeah.
No. We expect that from them. Lane Kiffin's never had great defenses.
No.
They got beat physically. They got beat mentally. How many times did you look up and there's an Ole Miss guy running right down the middle of the field wide open?
Mm-hmm.
And Alabama's players are lost.
And what I saw...
stunning.
You know, and what I saw was that, you know, I think... I mean, obviously... they're going to have to tweak some things, Alabama, defensively. That goes without saying.
Yep.
But I'm curious to see what that is, because to me, the biggest problem Alabama had was, you know, Nick Saban likes to use a lot of different packages versus a lot of different offensive personnel, and he just couldn't keep up with the substitutions. And so many times – Ole Miss would snap the football, and Alabama's defense wasn't even set.
They're standing there looking at the sideline.
So, to me, the short answer is simplify.
Yep.
Now, this week, going up against Georgia, will Todd Monken and the Georgia Bulldogs do more no huddle to try to create some of that confusion? I mean, you know, you are who you are. You can't go into this game trying to be Ole Miss. But, you know, I think there are some things that we've seen glimpses of from Georgia that, you know, you could probably – dude, it just, you know, because you're going to have, I mean, Georgia defensively is going to get stops. Alabama's not going to go up and down the field like they did against Ole Miss.
No, they're not.
They're going to have to punt. There's going to be turnovers. But that being said, though, offensively, Georgia, they can't just run and rely on defense like they did in the third quarter against Tennessee.
Well, we'll find out how good Georgia's secondary is this week.
Yeah.
Because these receivers for Alabama are ridiculous. And I'm sorry, Georgia, one hint, throw the ball to the tight end. They still haven't covered an Ole Miss tight end. Throw it to the tight end. I don't care who plays tight end. Throw it to them because they're going to be open. Russ, it was shocking to watch that Saturday night and see Alabama look lost on defense. Would you have ever believed that 5 years ago?
No.
Now, if you said 5 years ago, well, Alabama's never going to come around offensively or whatever, and they're still going to win.
Oh, they've come around offensively.
Right. But you would have thought they would still win the way they've always won.
Yeah.
But they couldn't play defense at all.
They gave up 647 yards. Ole Miss was 9 of 17 on third down. They converted four of those on fourth down. That's four stops for Alabama's defense.
Well, what's the stat? I told you they're last in the country in three and outs. Alabama. Oh,
Alabama.
Alabama can't stop anybody.
370. There's been games where Alabama might give up 379 yards passing, but the team doesn't run for anything.
Right.
There may have been a game where Alabama gave up 260 yards rushing, but the team didn't throw for anything.
Because Alabama made them one-dimensional.
Ole Miss threw for 379 and ran for 268.
And they didn't really stop A&M very much. They did a little bit. Yeah. They did more in Florida.
Well, yeah.
But, my goodness.
They gave up 19 to Missouri, 24 to Texas A&M, and then all of a sudden 48. Now, they've scored 38, 52, and 63.
And Mac Jones looks like a first-round pick.
Statistically speaking, he may be the best quarterback in the country right now, statistically speaking.
Right.
Najee Harris over 200 yards rushing and five touchdowns.
He looked great.
You know, and that was the one thing, too, at the end of the game. It was like, you know, Alabama was so bad defensively, that's going to be the focus, obviously. But they had, as impressive as Ole Miss was, we're impressed because it was Ole Miss doing it to Alabama. The reality of it is Alabama offensively was much more impressive than Ole Miss.
Well, but here's the thing. Like you just said, Alabama, you're not going to go up and down the field against Georgia like that.
No. Oh, no.
But is it going to take that for you to win a game? I mean.
Look, if Georgia has a good four quarters on offense, they're going to beat Alabama. They are. If they can, you know, second half of the Arkansas game, second half of the Tennessee game, first half of the Auburn game, if you get four quarters of that, Georgia's going to win the football game.
Yeah,
because they will stop Alabama. Alabama's not scoring 50, 60 points against Georgia's defense. They may get, I think 30 is kind of the number for both teams.
Like LSU last year, when nobody could stop LSU, Georgia did.
Yeah. I mean,
that was stopping LSU, holding them to 30-something.
Well, they averaged, what, 55 points a game? You held them to 37. That's three touchdowns underneath their average. Yeah.
I mean, they scored 40-something on us.
Right. I mean, that's and so I think 30 is kind of a magic number on Saturday. Who can get to 30 first?
I just can't believe how bad Alabama looks on defense. Now, again, their offense could be LSU's offense from last year, the way it looks. Could be very similar. But LSU at least played a little bit of defense. Yeah. LSU wasn't great defensively,
right,
but they did enough, and they caused turnovers.
The other thing I was wondering about the weekend collectively, I mean, and we've talked about how, look, this college football is an offensive game now with the – evolution of the RPO and how far down the field offensive linemen are allowed to go on a run pass option, it is almost impossible to play defense. I mean, are we going to see the NCAA step in and change the rules? Because, while, I mean, it was fascinating to watch Ole Miss do what they did against Alabama, I don't think people are going to sit there and watch 63-48 football games week in and week out.
I don't want to watch, and we've always said that, right? The Big 12 stuff is interesting. But do you want to watch 60 to 50 every game? No. You want to see somebody at least put up an effort on defense. And we didn't see that Saturday. Yeah, that was, you know, if that's an outlier, it's great. Right? But we don't want to watch that every game every week.
No.
You just don't. It's we've seen that in the Big 12. Nobody watches games when nobody puts any effort on defense.
Well, it turns into what's – I mean, look, if it's your team, it's your team. But if we're just talking about watching a college football game, what's the point of watching until the fourth quarter if that's what it's going to turn into?
If you can't get any stops, right.
Yeah, I mean, we have basketball. If you like up and down and lots of scoring, there's a sport for that.
People say that all the time, basketball on grass. But you also see that teams don't typically win titles – without doing something on. I know there's outliers, and we just talked about LSU. But again, LSU did play some defense.
Right. I mean, it got overshadowed what they used to back in. You remember back in 2019 when they used to play defense?
Yes.
Missouri. Like Moses.
And then, Russ, they get four shots from inside the one and can't get it in.
LSU.
How many games are they going to win this year?
I don't know, man.
They're going to be lucky to win five.
I don't know. It's bad. It's bad. I mean, that's bad. And, I mean, and then Mississippi State's performance since they beat you doesn't help.
Oh, my God.
It's bad.
No, but Mississippi State can't move the ball on anybody but LSU.
It's bad. It is. Is
that, who do they have this week?
Who? LSU?
Oh, they got Florida.
Yeah, LSU, Florida's this week. Yeah.
Okay, so they got. Here's their schedule. Tell me games they win. Right. So right now they're 1-2.
Mm-hmm.
Florida.
They can win that game.
At Florida, I don't think they do.
The at part doesn't matter as much.
Well,
this
year. But I don't think they can stop Florida's offense.
Well, vice versa.
They ain't stopped anybody. Well, that's true. South Carolina.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll give you two. Auburn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alabama.
No.
No. Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yeah. A&M. I don't think they're beating A&M.
Yeah, I mean, Florida and A&M are long shots.
And
it's
then
almost
Ole Miss.
Like two different categories.
Ole Miss is going to score 100 points on them.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, Missouri's offense is terrible.
Last year, Missouri
scored 45.
Yeah. We're talking about defense and how you have to play a little bit of defense. Last year, defensively, LSU held us to 3 points in the opener. Texas to 38. Northwestern State, 14. Vanderbilt, 38. Utah State, 6. Florida, 28. Mississippi State, 13. Auburn, 20. Then they gave up to 41 to Alabama. And remember, they had that next week against Ole Miss where John Reese Plumlee ran all over them. They won the game 58-37, and people were starting to say, can LSU play defense? And the rest of the way, Arkansas 20, Texas A&M 7, Georgia 10, Oklahoma 28, Clemson 25. Yeah, they could play defense.
And they caused a lot of turnovers.
So you got to be able to – I mean, so it's not – you can't just go out there and try to outscore people. You've got to make stops. But Alabama, I'm telling you right now, if Georgia has a good four quarters offensively – Georgia's going to beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa.
I'm just stunned that's the case. And it is. It absolutely is. This Georgia team, and I went into the season thinking they couldn't beat Alabama. I said it last week. They couldn't beat Alabama. They damn sure can beat Alabama.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I was wrong, man. 100% wrong.
The SEC feels more wide open than it's ever been. And then the other part of it, too, it's kind of getting into that problem that the Big 12's having. You know, Oklahoma beat Texas. So your premier programs are 2-2.
The Big 12.
There will be one undefeated team left in the SEC after Saturday. And an Auburn and a Florida and an LSU that are huge disappointments
so far. And the only undefeated team left in the Big 12 is Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
There's only one undefeated team in the ACC, and that's Clemson.
That ain't changing. What about Notre Dame?
That's right. I'm sorry. I forgot it. Notre Dame. There's two.
Come on. Don't you know Notre Dame's in a conference now?
You're right. I forgot about Notre Dame.
It's all right. Nobody remembers that. We'll take a break. I
think Georgia's going to win Saturday. And 3 days ago, I didn't think there was a chance.
Oh, there's a chance. There's a good chance. We'll take a break. You can jump in here with a phone call if you like. 478-646-ESPN. Back with more right after this.
Now, back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO. The Superstations.
Welcome back into the Midday Sports Zone. I haven't read this, but I got to give them credit. They painted on the wall in the new stadium, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, our brotherhood, unwavering kinship. And Mark Bradley's got a blog that details Dan Quinn's and all his stupid slogans that we don't have to worry about anymore. And there's a picture of him walking by it. In wake of what we found out about the uniforms and how he had such a big role in that, the fact that they painted the Brotherhood stuff on the wall in the stadium. This isn't college. It's a professional football team. The average lifespan of an NFL coach is what, 4 or 5 years? He lasted 6. A football coach, I mean, unless you're getting into like Andy Reid with the Eagles, or I guess McCarthy was with the Packers for a while.
Right.
I mean, unless you're getting into a decade plus, why does a head coach have that much influence over an organization?
Yeah, and why does a head coach even care what the uniforms look like anyway?
Oh, that I mean, in college, you're trying to do it for recruiting.
Sure.
National Football League, nobody cares.
And if that's what he came up with, that's a fireable offense anyway. Those damn uniforms are awful.
They are. They are.
Awful.
Let's get the phone call, 478-646-ESPN. Wesley's in Reynolds. What's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, you guys. How are y'all?
Good. What's on your mind?
Oh, just want to talk about the Georgia game for a second. Man, how good is our defense?
It's unreal, man.
If you really think about that game, Tennessee basically had 240-yard pass plays and for touchdown. I mean, that's really – I mean, one of their touchdowns, a snap over the head, okay? Mm-hmm. The second one you get, we're fourth and one on our own 40, you know, right in there. And for some bizarre reason, we go for it. I mean, the strength of our team is our defense and our punter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hopefully Kirby got that out of his system. I think he got a little anxious. He wanted to put Tennessee away early and got a little anxious. And it ended up, you know, then they make one 40-yard pass play. DJ Daniel kind of gets twisted around. And, you know, the receiver makes a good play on the ball. They get that one touchdown. And
I think he pushed off a little bit, too, Wesley. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, he did. He did. And it kind of twisted DJ around. And then there's another, you know, then you get George Pickens making a boneheaded, you know, decision. I mean, I defended it more than anybody last year against Tech. You know, that's one thing when you're a freshman in the heat of the game, you know, battling against the corner, there's probably some trash talking going on, some pushing and shoving, you know. Kind of gave him the benefit of, you know, that he's 19 years old. This is inexcusable. I mean, you're on the sidelines taking a water break. You know what I mean? That that killed us. You know, that cost us 15 yards. And then, what was it, two plays later, you know, they go deep again, and the quarterback, Garantano, just makes an amazing throw and an awesome catch. I mean, you got to give him that one. That was just a great play. But you take away the Pickens, decision by Kirby, and the snap over the head, and what do you got? You know, it might have been a whole different ball game. Might have been even, you know, more one-sided than it was. So, but just on a side note, and I'll let y'all go, I was sitting about 20 feet from Jim Chaney. I could have thrown a peanut at him. Man, I was watching. It was so fun. That was the most fun part of the game, is watching his reaction after the Monty Rice strip sack, scoop and score. Man, he just put his head down in his hands, and then he got done and scared his chair back and just sat back just with the, you know, but there was just so many funny times, man. It was funny watching his face. But anyway, yeah, I'll let y'all go, man.
Hey, Wesley, any concern about those two calls by Kirby, the two fourth downs? Because I thought he made a bad decision on both of them.
I did too. My dad liked the one. I was sitting with my dad. He liked the one where we're trying to go for a touchdown. You know, another thing I'll say is, man, I love Stetson Bennett, but why would you put a 150-pound quarterback and try to squeeze him in between a bunch of 300-pound D linemen in the SEC? I mean, dude, you know, give it. You got a freaking giant in Zeus back there, and you got a speed demon in Kenny McIntosh that could jump over the pile. You know, do something like that, or flip it out to the outside, do something. But dadgum, don't put our, you know, the size of a kicker. Why would you throw him in there? You know, I mean, come on. But I don't have any concern this week. I don't think Kirby's not going to do that against Alabama. He respects Nick Saban, and he respects Alabama too much to do that. I think hopefully he got out of his system, you know, Saturday, and he'll play a lot smarter, you know, as far as those decisions go, especially in the first half. I mean, it's one thing, you know, in the second half, but man, if you cut yourself and bleed against Alabama, man, when they smell blood, they're going in for the kill. So
yeah.
You can't do stuff like that against Alabama. But anyway.
Hey, appreciate the call, man. Take care.
Appreciate it.
All right, so you
478-646 ESPN. J-Rad's in Macon. What's up, J-Rad?
Hey, what's up, guys? How y'all?
Good. Hope you are.
You know what's going to happen with the Falcons, right?
What's that?
They're going to play inspired football with the new coach, or the interim coach, I mean. They're going to win seven games and end up with the 12th draft pick.
Raheem Morris will be the new head coach. Don't say it.
You know, it's coming, man. They're going to win enough to screw up the draft.
I hope you're dead wrong, but I mean, it's the Falcons. So, yeah, that's probably the most plausible scenario.
That's what they do. Another thing about the Georgia game, when they were down, they had it on the goal line there, and they went for it on fourth down. If you watch the replay, Ben Cleveland, 6'7", 350, was trying to pull, and McClendon next to him was literally knocked in the backfield. Hmm. I mean, how does that happen on a fourth and goal from the one?
I don't know. I don't know, man. I'd get behind Big 74 and just like with Zeus, like Wesley was saying, and just get a push forward. I mean,
hey, J-Rod, you know how it doesn't happen? You kick the field goal and take the points right before halftime. That's how it doesn't happen.
Well, yeah,
they won 44.
I know. I'm just joking. It's not like it gave any Tennessee any momentum because they smacked them around in the second half. I'm just joking. No, I didn't like the decision at the time, but obviously it didn't hurt them at all.
No, it didn't. But no, I can understand. Like you translate that to this Saturday, and that is stuff that that could backfire on you for sure.
That'll take you down Saturday for sure.
Big time. Thanks, guys.
All right, Jay. I appreciate it. You know, yeah, no, as good as Georgia's defense is, and I mean, coaches don't think like this, but as a fan, like talking about should they, the decision to go for it down on the goal line, I like that. Man, inside the five, I have a hard time kicking because even if you don't get it,
one doesn't bother me. The first one is just terrible.
The first one bothers me a little bit, but that defense is so good. I would be tempted to go into like the Vanderbilt game just for the heck of it and say, all right, boys. We're not punting this week. I don't care what. I don't care if it's 3rd and 10 on our own 15 with that defense, just for the heck of it. You know, we're not going to punt.
So like Sega, the old Sega game. Where you ever play Sega and you and the guy you're playing say, okay, neither one of us are going to punt.
Yeah.
The whole game and see what happens.
No punts. Let's get in another phone call. 478-646-ESPN. Larry is in Gray. What's up, man?
Hey, Russ. Appreciate your show and appreciate being able to call into your show. But you did make a comment, and I'm not here to critique you, but I am. You made a comment that usually a coach, when you were talking about the Falcons coach, which I agree with you wholeheartedly, it was time for him to be gone. But it was time for him to be gone because he's losing.
Right.
He's been losing several times, and he needs to be gone. But you made a comment, both of y'all made the comment, that usually a coach gets removed or people want him removed when his team is, you know, not doing well. I think one of y'all used the word sucks, and I agree with it. But there are times a lot of coaches, you know, and I get in trouble if I call in at 3 o'clock on this one, of course. But I'm calling earlier, and I appreciate y'all taking my call, that, you know, there's times when coaches need to go, and I agree with this, need to step it up some, take them to the next level. But there have been several coaches fired with a winning record. Mm-hmm. So that is my concern sometimes when a coach is doing well and the fan base still didn't agree with what the coach is doing, there's a lot of times they do get relieved. Now, that is not the case for the Falcons. I agree. We were all so excited when he came in early on and brought them to the Super Bowl, but Things have changed. They still say he hadn't lost the locker room, but he ain't won a ball game.
Well, when you're 0-5, that doesn't matter as much, I don't think.
It doesn't. I mean, I'm glad the players are still behind him, but sure. My gosh, man, you got to win.
Yep, that's it. I mean, you got to win. That's the bottom line.
Do your friends still not like Stetson Bennett now, or have they come on board with Stetson Bennett?
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. Y'all sort of threw me under the bus. I'm the one who made the signs, and I've been passing them out SB for Heisman. I mean, he's winning. It's just like,
no doubt, but
baby, just win, baby, just win. I don't care how you do it. I really don't.
Yeah, no doubt.
I don't care if he's a Heisman or he's the worst, not the worst quarterback in the SEC, but not very highly thought of. As long as he's motivate, and you know, when they were interviewing him at the end of the show, many of the players came over and said, the mailman delivered, and you know, that just shows me they're behind.
Yeah, they are, no doubt.
They were very much behind him, so my friends are still saying, if this is the best we've got, man, we're not going to beat Alabama with him playing like this, and we can't, you know, get a yard. I said, would y'all quit? Please, quit. Get sort of positive on this. But they are still saying that, Daniel. I mean, they're thinking we can't go very far with him, and this week will tell the tale. And I'm not there. I'm not there. I think the guy is playing hard. He's doing a great job, and I'm 100% behind SC.
Hey, so man, we appreciate the call, Larry. We got to run the break.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Back to the Midday Sports Zone on Sports Radio 93.1 WXKO, thesuperstations.com.
Welcome back into the Midday Sports Zone. I guess you could say those officials on Saturday night in the Auburn-Arkansas game had the eye of the tiger.
Ugh.
See what I did there?
They had the eye of something, or they didn't have any eyes. How do you, I mean, seriously, I could see getting it wrong that it was a fumble the field because it was a tough play.
Oh, they made them, yeah.
But you reviewed it.
Right. And they still got it wrong.
478-646
ESPN. Ken is in Macon. What's up, man?
Well, first thing I want to say, I'm happy that Atlanta Falcons and Arthur Blank finally woke up and finally did what they're supposed to do and fire Dan Quinn and Cotton Pickett Thomas and Mitrov. That's one thing.
Now we can just enjoy the rest of this miserable season in peace, knowing that changes is on the way. There's no doubt.
Yeah, that's right. And then the number two, I was hoping Clemson lose, but they pulled it out. They got a good team and congrats, Daniel.
Why were you hoping Clemson was going to lose? What's that got to do with you?
Because a long time ago when Georgia used to play Clemson, that's a bitter rival, and I just didn't like Clemson from a long time ago, Daniel. It don't have nothing to do with
you. Well, they don't play anymore, though.
I know that, but when I used to go to the games, it did.
Okay.
And I used to hate it. Like I don't like Bama either, but Bama's offense looked good, the defense didn't, but I know Nick Saban won't get that together, so I'm scared about the game Saturday because it's going to be a hard game. I know Georgia got great defense, but that dog on Bama's offense, wow.
Yeah, they're good. They're good, but Georgia's defense is pretty good too, Ken.
I know that, but I just don't know. I mean, I think the quarterback looked better. I mean, Stenson Bennett looked better than what I have seen him, and I guess he's getting used to everything. So maybe he's the one that bringing them where they need to go. But I'm not sure. You know, it's going to be hard against Alabama, especially in Tuscaloosa. Woo.
Yep. Well, hey, Killer, it's good to hear from you, man. Take care.
Okay. You do too.
All right, we'll do it. Ken does not like Clemson.
Too bad. Too sad. We used to have a friend of ours. His son used to say that. Too bad, too sad.
I mean, I understand. I understand to a point what people are saying about Stetson Bennett. All right? This guy was a walk-on out of high school. He went to a junior college. He came back. He was not supposed to be the first, second, or third string quarterback this year.
No doubt.
And so that, can you win the SEC with Stetson Bennett at quarterback? The answer as of about 10:30 Saturday night is absolutely. Georgia is the only team in this conference that's playing defense.
Don't wins matter? Isn't it not supposed to be about? Larry said, I don't care how we win. I don't care what it looks like.
Right.
But people.
But no.
You're winning.
Look. In every year of SEC football I have ever watched, Stetson Bennett, that's going to be a problem. That's going to be something you got to, you know, you're really going to have to be able to run the football or you're going to be in trouble. Georgia could not run the football against Tennessee with their primary running back. Zamir White had 22 carries for 50 yards. They scored 44 points. So this year, I think maybe this is the way it's going to be moving forward, but I think it's safe to say so far this year is an outlier. So can you win the SEC with Stetson Bennett as your quarterback in 2019, 2018, 2017, 2016? Probably not. But in the day and age of 63-48, 44-21, 41-38, 30-28, 45-41, 41-7, and then there was that 24-2 game. Yeah, yeah. With that offensive line, those running backs, those receivers, and that defense – Yeah.
No doubt.
Absolutely.
That defense. Look, I know Stetson Bennett's not the sexiest quarterback in the world. He's not, you know, he's not flashy or whatever, but he makes the throws and he gets the job done. And you're playing complementary football. And it's not like their last year's offense. I know they're not great, but they're better than they were offensively last year.
You know, and that's a really good point too, Daniel. Not only that, I mean, look, schematically it's improved. You know, I haven't done a side-by-side statistical analysis, but
the naked eye looks better.
When they throw down the field, it's in the middle, it's the sides, it's the flats, the tight ends, check downs. I mean, they're attacking the whole field. They were not doing that last year. But also you have to remember with the newness, new coordinator, offensive line, running backs, wide receivers. I think we have to say that with Kyaris Jackson's emergence as the go-to guy, quarterback, that whatever the offense is through three games, it's going to get better as the season goes along too, as these guys get more and more comfortable with what they're doing. So, it's interesting coming into this matchup, this highly anticipated matchup, and this is where the fun of college football it lies. We were so sure that it would come down to Georgia and Alabama, and then Jamie Newman opted out, and then JT Daniels wasn't cleared, and then the DeJuan Mathis first half against Arkansas happened. Think about what it looked like at halftime against Arkansas compared to what it looks like now. I mean, it's a complete 180, just like that.
And that Arkansas, the first half, I thought they weren't going to win five games. Again, it shows you got to play 60 minutes, mm-hmm. and you don't make snap judgments on the first half of the first game of the year.
Yep.
But they look bad.
Well, and here's the other part of it, too. This is one thing to keep in mind, because this is so different than other teams in the country right now. And again, we haven't seen Ohio State play. I've seen two teams play that are always going to be in a game no matter what, and that's Georgia and Clemson, because they can stop people. They can stop people.
If and you that's can stop different. People, stopping people now is different than it was 20 years ago.
That might be holding them to a field goal right. every time they come down the field. But if you can get stops, you're never out of a football game. And those are the two teams I've seen this year that can get stops as far as the big picture right. national championship right. part is concerned.
Right, right. And again, we haven't seen Ohio State yet. I think Ohio State would be in that mix too. I really do. I think this week will decide a lot of this. But right now, I think Georgia's a better team than Alabama, because the offense is pretty good. The defense is great. Alabama, the offense is outstanding. The defense is awful.
That's all you can say about that performance on Saturday night. It was awful. Georgia's had challenging halves.
Right.
But I don't think at any point you thought, oh, this offense is terrible.
The first half, but then they changed quarterbacks.
Well, that defense that I saw Saturday night, as good as the offense was, it was still weird to say this. It was terrible. Alabama's defense, it was terrible. They couldn't stop Ole Miss.
I couldn't believe it. I could not believe watching that I was watching Alabama.
And they won the game. They won the game.
Have you ever heard the stories like in the 20s where the team was going to play and another team would sneak in like high school kids and put them in their uniforms and say, this is the team, and then run out there and do that before the game? That's what I thought happened. That's not Alabama. Alabama's defense is not supposed to look like that.
Yeah. No, it's not. Then John on Twitter, just need a game manager. Bama didn't always have a five-star quarterback. Bennett just needs to manage game. If Alabama's defense is as bad as it was against Ole Miss, yeah. No, I think that's true. But I also think the college football has changed since Alabama was winning with a quote-unquote game manager.
Right. And I think Alabama's defense is going to hear this all week.
Oh, that's
and they're going to play better. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's in the day and age of saying all you need is a game manager. Yeah, I'm not saying no, but I think you're going to need Stetson Bennett to make plays to beat Alabama, or, you know, potentially if you look ahead to a playoff of Clemson or an Ohio State. That being said, he may get stuck with that label, John, but I also think Stetson Bennett showed you with his arm and with his feet, he can make plays, and he's more than just a game manager. I think he showed a little bit of that
he
on Saturday.
He made a lot of good throws, not just Saturday, but the game before. and sat and the Arkansas game too, when they were dead in the water.
Yeah,
sat that Arkansas game.
Well, it's
and he came in and made a lot of throws, and he's done that every game.
It's one of those things in recruiting that, you know, there's the height and the weight part of being a quarterback that obviously he doesn't measure up to.
Sure.
So you may get dinged for that, but everything else seems to be there.
And the people, and I don't know Larry's friends, but I might insult them here. Don't listen to those people. If it's about what he looks like and flash and all that stuff, and he's winning games, I don't get it. I don't get it. It's about winning games. And they're 3-0, and if they win Saturday, they're going to be number two in the country.
And not going anywhere for a while.
And they might get number one votes.
Yeah.
Win at Alabama, they're going to get first place votes.
No doubt. Because even with that performance on Saturday night, I think there's still plenty of people that would say Alabama is a top four team. And you know what? It's hard to argue against that. All right. Don't forget now, Braves pregame show starts here on the Super Stations at 6:50. The Bill Shank Show will take you right up to that. First pitch tonight, 8:08, game one in the National League Series. Oh, the excitement's starting to build. 7 hours and change till first pitch. 7 hours and change till first pitch. It's going to be a fun night. Probably going to be a late night. That's all right, man. Because if the Braves win, we're not going to care. I'm just so excited that they're here. And yes, I think they can beat the Dodgers. I'm not doing predictions, not doing any of that stuff.
I'll do one. Braves in seven. Blech. On to the World Series.
For Daniel, we're out of time. Thanks for the calls and the interaction. I'm nervous. I'm excited, but I'm nervous. And Ken already said he's not saying anything this week. I'm not either, Ken. We'll just shake hands when the series is over. For Daniel, I'm Russ. We'll do it again tomorrow at 11. Y'all have a good one.